The Talk of the Northwest. The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. You're very welcome along to another edition of the Greg Hughes Show here in Highland Radio at 4 minutes past nine on this Wednesday, the 8th of April. How are you all keeping? I hope you're very well indeed. As we signed off the show yesterday, we were talking of the next 12, 24 hours being critical for the state of the world, effectively. And that's not to overstate it. Of course, we were facing down the abyss with Donald Trump threatening, believe it or not, to wipe out civilization. And the ramifications of that would have been huge. But thankfully, we had another Taco Tuesday. And Iran really has negotiated quite a good little 2-week ceasefire for themselves. It's their 10-point plan that Donald Trump has seemingly accepted as a basis for negotiations going forward. We're going to have some analysis of that a little later on, purely because it has such an impact on us here in the Northwest, as it does in every single corner of every county, of every province, or every country right across the globe. If you've anything to say in relation to that 086 60 25,000, I'll run through the terms of that tentative deal in the papers. But already oil prices have dropped down below $100, which is the benchmark, the one that's critical. Iran has astonishingly, despite 14,000 bombing raids and billions upon billions of US taxpayers' money in trying to bring Iran to its knees, Iran now has full control of the state of that really critical Strait Hormuz. And they didn't have a financial take from it previously, but now, thanks to Donald Trump, we will see, hopefully, oil flow through it, and they're going to get a dividend from every single tanker that goes through. They're in a better position than before he went in. But stocks are down right across the world. There's not going to be, and hopefully if this plays out to turn into a permanent peace, as permanent as any peace can be, you're not going to see huge fundamental changes at the petrol pumps for quite some time, and I think we need to probably prepare for that. But the small protests around the country today, mainly in Dublin, they stayed there overnight. Dublin's, in terms of getting around it, is at a standstill. The main choke points have been blocked by those demonstrating fuel prices. And I've been running some numbers. I'll get to them a little later on as to what the government could do and how it could use resources to alleviate the pressure. Now, whether or not it's in line with what the EU says you can or can't do, I'm not really too interested in that at this point, because in this world, people do whatever the hell they like, whenever they like, you know. And I'm on about in terms of killing kids, destroying nations. People do whatever they like. So if we were to step outside the EU rules a little to try and keep businesses going, to try and keep families from slipping even further into poverty, well, you know what? If our EU overlords don't like it, maybe we should say, you know, this is a national issue and we're going to take some national action. I'll get to that down the line, because it's really quite remarkably manageable. Now, I've double-checked the figures that I got together as much as I can, and I don't think they're wrong. But anyway, we'll get to that. Let's start with some of the papers. We'll start with the local out today, the Finn Valley Voice. Revitalising vacant and derelict properties will help strengthen the local economy, improve the appearance of the town centre, and will support the long-term regeneration of the community in the Twin Towns. Ballybuffet is a national byword for derelict properties. There's more empty windows on Main Street than you'd expect in a town three times its size. Ballybuffet regularly tops the national list for empty premises. Now, Donegal County Council is tackling Ballybuffet head on. And there is a new scheme from a government as well, which will hopefully bring... When I was doing previous interviews, I always felt that the dereliction in Ballybuffet Snorlagh was misrepresented. You're counting the same properties all the time, and it's done on air codes and active air codes, and you could have one building in Ballybuffet Snorlagh. I'm not sure if there's one there. So you could say, for instance, have seven buildings or seven businesses or seven air codes, and they could be still active in there and move to the hub, for an example. But they could have offices with an air code that's no longer active, and that's counted as derelict. I mean, there are other criteria, but I think the Twin Towns is a bit more vibrant than the derelict figures would suggest. And I also think it's been misrepresented in how the numbers are put together. That's just my feelings. I have similar feelings about the not the Tidy Towns, but those litter surveys. I think they can do an area a disservice that it doesn't actually deserve. But anyway, it'll be interesting to see now if this new government scheme brings life back to some of our towns. So on to the fuel protests. And hauliers, farmers and contractors protesting against the cost of fuel are continuing to cause disruption in the capital, that's Dublin, and across the country. Some protesters intended to sleep in their vehicles last night and were adamant their protest will continue. And in fact, they were good to their word. At Galway Port, the fuel terminal was shut down from 11 a.m. yesterday after tractors parked across the entrance, preventing delivery trucks from refueling. No fuel has left the terminal since yesterday morning, and pumps in Galway were expected to run dry in the early hours of last evening. And there are other pumping stations, or whatever they're called, where the wholesale fuel comes from. They're blocked this morning, another two of them, so you might see shortages. We can't back down. Livelihoods and whole industries are facing ruin, one protester from Galway said. Kevin McPollin, CEO of Fuels for Ireland, said the blockade will hit supplies across the region in the coming days. The guards were asked to attend. They didn't attend for over an hour, which is the source of some frustration, he said. A number of tractors were parked across the entrance and drivers got out of the vehicles and wouldn't identify themselves. But the government is doing well. The government took in an extra €6 million in excise duty last month as motorists paid more for petrol and diesel due to the war in Iran. New Exchequer figures show €0.5 billion in excise duty receipts were collected last month, up 12% in March last year. Right, so what could be done? And I was looking at the figures for the government take for the first 3 months of this year have been announced. And I note that they're talking about increased tax income, but also increased spending. So I think it's like $22 billion came in, which is more than they were anticipating. It's more than last year. And $26 billion went out. So you would say, well, there's no money. There's no money to sort out the fuel crisis. But I argue there is, because as I say, and I'm open to correction on these figures, if you want to try and correct me, please do, because I don't want to give bad information. But €1.5 billion, €1.5 billion, €1.5 billion. That's the staggering amount of our tax money the government tucked away into future funds in just the first 3 months of this year. So this isn't spending on schools, this isn't spending on infrastructure or Ukrainians or whatever you want to talk about. This is the money that's being put away for a rainy day. €1.5 billion in the first 3 months of the year. So they call it a buffer for the year 2041. But let's take a look at the prices at the pumps right now. Petrol is hitting €1.96. Diesel is well north of 218 now in some places. So look at the maths. Even if the politics isn't simple, the maths, I think, are pretty simple. So if the Minister for Finance took that single Q1 contribution, just those first 3 months, and put it back into the pockets of you, the Irish motorists, we'd be talking about a measly 15 cent temporary cuts. We wouldn't be talking about them. We'd be looking at 50 cent off every single litre of fuel for the rest of 2026. 50 cents, so that's €25 back in your pocket every time you fill your 50 litre tank. So we're told, right, we're saving money for a rainy day in the 2040s. But for the commuters in Donegal, or the hauliers in Cork, or the bus drivers in Donegal paying record prices today, it isn't just raining, it is pouring. So maybe it's time the government realises that the future of our economy, the future of our economy depends on people being able to get to work today. So again, open to correction, €1.5 billion of the tax increase has been put away in the first 3 months to the future funds. If that was utilised to reduce tax on petrol and diesel, it would bring the amount down below where it was at now. People might say yes, but the EU says this, that and them. But as I said at the top of the show, this is a national crisis. We step outside European laws quite a lot, VRT, ETC. There's lots of little breaks and changes from legislation. Why not use that €1.6 billion for the rainy day fund to address the flooding that's happening right now? Because what kind of an economy, what kind of a country will we have in 2041 if we find ourselves now in a situation where buses can't bus, lorries can't lorry, tractors can't tractor, and we can't get to and from work. So anyway, maybe it's not as simple as I laid out. Maybe I've done the math wrong. I tried my best. But 1.6 billion, 1.5 billion, let's call it like that, 50 cent per litre it could be reduced potentially for 2026, which would give us plenty of time to see a return of the flow of oil and all its derivatives right around the world. Will it happen? Don't think so. Right, the Irish Daily Mail, night the world held its breath and prayed. Donald Trump threatened to wipe out the whole civilization of Iran as peace talks went down to the wire last night. The US bombed Karg Island and Israel pounded bridges, railways and roads across the country as they appeared to lay the groundwork for major escalation. About 20 minutes before that deadline passed, Pakistan gave Donald Trump an off-ramp, and he needed an off-ramp so bad. He had talked himself into an impossible situation, and his biggest supporters are turning against him. His language, abhorrent, threatening, war crimes. Make no bones about it. I don't have to be balanced on that. It is a war crime, what he was proposing. And as I say, Pakistan gave him the off-ramp, and Iran, as far as I can see, are on the brink of winning that war. So the papers obviously don't carry that because the news broke very late last night. Obviously, because it's the Easter week, there's a lot of activity with teachers' unions meeting, talking about all the big issues of the day. Pay obviously is always going to be there. Art teacher Martin McGill commutes over an hour each way to her school in Aranmore Island in County Donegal by car, ferry and bus. Her school, Gomskull McDermida, teaches 75 students through both English and Irish. One third of the students do not speak English or Irish as their first language. Miss Gill lives in Glenties, a 40-minute drive from Burton Port, where she gets a often rocky 20-minute ferry to Aranmore, followed by a short bus trip to her school. By the time I get off the bus, depending on the waves and the weather, it would be well over an hour by the time I get to school. You could be running off the boat sometimes because the waves are crashing in. You make sure you're wearing good shoes, Ms. Gill says. Speaking to Teachers Union of Ireland conference in County Kilkenny yesterday, Ms. McGill called for a reintroduction of the island allowance worth €2,297 as well as the teaching through Irish allowance of €1,974 and the Gaeltacht allowance of €3,391. These allowances are only applicable to teachers who entered the profession before 2011. So you've got teachers in the same school under different terms and conditions. We cover this extensively, but just thought I would read it out because it is a story we covered quite a lot on this programme and it is quite a significant development. A sixth person has been arrested by Gardaí investigating the attempted murder of Charles Duher. Mr. Duher suffered life-changing injuries during the attack on him and his father in Donegal in January 20th of last year, which was so serious that Gardaí reclassified it as an attempted murder. Now, I must say, I'm not saying they wouldn't have anyway, but the family had to campaign really quite hard for, it felt, that redesignation. Charles was airlifted to the Royal Victoria Hospital in Belfast following the attack. His father, Charles Sr., who's in his 60s, was less seriously injured and treated in hospital in Letterkenny. A five-strong gang of masked men burst into the home, the family home in Lifford, and beat both men around the head and body in what started off as a home invasion and armed robbery. Mr. Duher lost part of his skull in the violent attack and there were fears he could die from his injuries, and I know it was very touch and go for quite some time. But thankfully he recovered after undergoing numerous operations, including having a metal plate inserted in his head. And in an update, Gardaí said a sixth person had been arrested. The man in his 50s was arrested on Easter Sunday and quizzed by detectives at Garda stations in this region. And in a statement, Gardaí said he has since been released and a file will be prepared for the Director of Public Prosecution. Right, okay, that's a run through some of the papers. And just in reference to a comment Kieran made watching on our socials, Kieran has said 6 million, not billion. And sorry, I'm switching from billion to million in different circumstances. So I don't think I misspoke, but if I do, I apologise. It's 6 million was the extra tax take on fuel. Right, let's go to Sinn Féin Deputy Matt Carthy, who has an important piece of legislation going through the Dáil. Good morning to you, Matt.
Good morning, Greg. Good to talk to you again. Yeah, thanks. Been a long time.
It has indeed. Right, OK, so talk to us about this civil protection orders legislation which you're trying to progress.
Yes, and thanks for allowing me to highlight the issue, Greg. So this is a piece of legislation that I introduced in the Dáil last year. It's the Victims of Sexual Violence Civil Protection Orders Bill. And it's actually quite a simple piece of legislation, but it comes out of conversations that I had as chairperson of the Oireachtas Justice Committee with a number of victims. These are people who were victims of heinous sexual crimes. And in most cases, the people we were talking to were victims for a prolonged period of time. And there were people who successfully secured convictions against their perpetrators. So in other words, the people who committed those crimes served custodial sentences, and in some cases they are still imprisoned but are due to be released over the next number of either months or years. And they told me about a huge fear that they now have as the clock is ticking towards the release of their perpetrator. In some cases we met people who had been victims, who had successfully ensured prosecutions of their perpetrators, and then their perpetrators were released, and every day they live in fear because they fear for reprisal, they fear that there would be some effort made to either contact or to harass or to perhaps even commit a further crime.
Because now, it pains me to challenge what seems like a very worthwhile proposal, but I must. Is there not a potential for a double jeopardy here in that, you know, you're punishing a person potentially twice for the same crime? You know, obviously,
we believe...
No, go ahead. Yeah, go ahead. Yep.
So what the legislation allows for is that as part of the sentence, so when at the point of conviction, a judge can impose the custodial sentence, but can also impose a protection order, preventing the perpetrator from approaching or perhaps even living in the vicinity of the victim once they're released from prison. And in fact, it's not a new piece of legislation. The exact same provision applies in the harassment legislation that the Dáil passed about 3 or 4 years ago. So this is just applying a law that currently exists to an area that it doesn't already cover. And it's about providing that protection for victims, because mm-hmm. at the moment, in the case of the victims that I'm talking about, when their perpetrator is released, if the perpetrator was to try and was to begin stalking them or following them or harassing them, they then need to go through an entire new process again. And they have to report it to the guards. The guards have to bring it to court. Mm-hmm. The guards have to then secure or they can take a civil case to secure a protection order. But that's huge stress and huge distress and huge financial burden. So this is about cutting this off mm-hmm. at the pass and ensuring that at the point of conviction, when somebody has gone through the trauma of a trial and actually has secured a conviction, that they don't begin a new countdown to the day that the perpetrator is released, living in more and more fear as it gets closer to that time, that they're actually given that sense of relief. And we've met, as I say, with a number of victims. We've also met with a number of advocacy groups, and they all tell us that this is, as a simple piece of legislation, it could be incredibly profound.
Oh, for sure, but I'm on about it. I'm kind of more on about its enforcement, right? So, I mean, these would be very broad barring orders. It's not a threat that it could be unconstitutional, infringing on the constitutional rights of someone, even if they've been found guilty of such a heinous crime, their right to freedom of movement. And there's also rights there, whether we like it or not, for a private and family life. How would those constitutional questions be overcome?
Well, I don't think there are constitutional issues in the sense that this provision already applies in law for what could technically or arguably be
you have to seek these type of orders,
under the harassment legislation. In the same way manner as my bill allows, a judge can impose a protection order that would apply prior to the release of somebody from prison. And the overwhelming legal rationale for that is that this is actually about ensuring the safety of the public and particularly of the victim. And we have to remember in all of this, a tiny minority of sexual assaults actually ever make it before the courts and secure convictions. And one of the reasons for that, of course, is that people don't feel comfortable reporting it, or they don't feel that they will get justice. If you have a situation whereby people have a fear that even if they do secure secure a conviction, that ultimately their perpetrator will be in a position to live next door to them, or to follow them, or to live in the same vicinity, or to harass them, then that reduces the likelihood that they will actually bring their case to the attention of the authorities. So in my view, the overriding public good that this legislation would bring about would mean that it would withstand any potential constitutional challenge.
And Matt, how do you, you know, at what point does this kick in terms of crimes, if you know what I mean? Like, they're all severe, they're all horrendous for victims, don't get me wrong, but presumably there has to be a start point where this would be in the this would be allow a judge to make such an order. So where does that start? Where does that?
These are laws that are defined in law in terms of sexual violence cases that reach a particular threshold, and that would allow a judge to apply a custodial sentence. So in some cases, for what might be described as minor, or at least that lesser custodial sentences or even suspended sentences are put in place, the protection order could at least be put in place immediately. In cases of custodial sentences of a number of years, obviously you're talking about very, very serious crimes. And in that case, in my view, it would be up to the prosecution, the victim, or the judge of their own volition to seek and impose such a protection order. And because this is happening at the initial trial stage, of course, the defence get the opportunity to make their case and to make their plea with the judge. But in my view, most people would consider to be absolutely common sense that if somebody has suffered a serious sexual assault, has had the bravery to report it, and has the fortune of securing a conviction, the very least that they would deserve is that upon the release of the perpetrator, that they don't have to live in fear of that same person again.
And what about cases of domestic violence, coercive control, whereby the same anxieties, the same stress, the same concern would exist for victims, Matt?
My legislation covers sexual violence cases. So in some instances,
of course, there will be a sexual element to that. I understand that, but I'm on about where that's absent.
Yeah, so for the legislation as we've produced, it relates to sexual violence cases. And just to say, I'm very grateful that the bill has passed first and second stages in the Dáil unanimously. And now it will be up to the Oireachtas Justice Committee, which, as I say, I chair, to carry out detailed consideration. And in the next number of weeks, we will have hearings with a number of advocacy groups, but we will also have the Oireachtas Legal Services providing a briefing to the committee. And my hope is that if there are any outstanding or legal issues, such as those you raised, or if there is scope to expand the legislation even further, that at committee stage we'll be able to tease all of those.
Would you be in favour of it being, and I mean it's your, you drew it up, but would you be in favour of it being extended to offer primarily women, but men too, presumably, protection? We all know how domestic violence, can lead on to the most worst circumstances. There's an epidemic of domestic violence in this country and on this island at the moment, and also to coercive control. We're seeing custodial sentences for that crime. Would you be in favour of, or will you seek to offer primarily women victims of those crimes similar protections, because they are, although they may not have been the victim of a sexual crime, they still would have the same fear and anxieties of the perpetrator being released and potentially moving into the house next door?
Well, I'm absolutely open to any changes to the legislation that people feel are warranted and feasible. I suppose one of the nature of domestic violence cases is that actually it's generally the protection order that comes first in terms of the legal processes. This piece of legislation is to deal with a very specific anomaly whereby a conviction has been secured, where somebody is about to be released and there is a huge fear on the part of the victim, which is entirely understandable. So from my perspective, the priority is to get that piece of legislation passed this year. I hope that government will facilitate that, and if there are measures that could potentially strengthen the legislation, certainly if there's measures that would make it more legally robust, then I will be absolutely open to agreeing to any amendments in that regard. But to me, in terms of the people who I have met who have been victims in this cases, and as you say, it's both men and women, but predominantly women, having spoken to them and having heard their stories, I feel that we have an obligation to ensure that this legislation is in place as quickly as possible, knowing that obviously this type of legislation can't be applied retrospectively. So in fairness to those people who have been campaigning for my legislation to be passed, they themselves won't benefit. Yeah. They're doing it for others. Mm-hmm. So as others will come forward, tell their stories and secure convictions, safe from the knowledge that they won't have the fear that those people currently have.
Okay, thank you very much indeed. That's Sinn Féin Deputy Matt Carthy there. Now, the fuel protests aren't over. There are delays to public transport in Dublin City, and fuel depots in Galway and Limerick have been blocked. This as fuel price protesters and protests cause a second day of disruption around the country. Multiple vehicles were left overnight on roads in Dublin city centre, some from this region, I'm sure. And protesters and protests resumed this morning, with protesters in Dublin blocking both O'Connell Bridge and the North and South Quays. There is disruption elsewhere, but primarily now at these in the capital, but also at the storage depots. Chrissy Watson is a TikToker and talks of life as a haulage wife. Good morning, Chrissy.
Morning.
Now, obviously, I mean, everyone went into this with their eyes wide open. If you are going to protest at this level with a view to bringing the government to the table, there's going to be disruption, isn't there? I mean, that's just a part of life.
There's going to be disruption, and people are just not aware of how much their lives are going to be disrupted without this disruption, basically, of how far it stems forward.
What is it like in your household? What is the impact of these fuel prices creeping up and then jumping up as they did?
Well, we run a semi-small haulage firm, and we've seen that prices going up over £5,000 a month, or sorry, a week, just over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, and obviously all of those costs can't be passed on immediately.
No, we have eventually had to add fuel surcharges, but we're paying our fuel bills out every week, but not seeing that return for potentially up to 3 months.
And, I mean, obviously, eventually this is going to lead to price increases that everybody will feel. And I think that really was the thrust of what you were saying, isn't it? That, you know, a little bit of pain
exactly
now is a view to alleviating a lot of pain into the future.
That's exactly my point. And I think that people are very, very nearsighted in that they're disrupted to get to work or whatever, get their coffee, whatever their problem is, today or yesterday, but they're not thinking of when they walk into a supermarket and there is either no food or whatever, because even those hauliers just can't afford to run any longer.
Yeah, and the truth is, you know, something can be done internally in this country to ease the pressure right now. As I said in the show yesterday, and I said it previously as well, I think the state has one eye on fuel supply, right? So we could have it cheaper now and everyone can fill up their tanks or even start hoarding fuel. But unless these peace talks come to fruition, there is an issue too with actually the availability of fuel, Chrissy. Does that concern you?
It concerns me entirely, but like, we haven't seen it yet, though it is something that we're, of course, aware of.
Yeah, indeed. Okay, but your principal message is, look, whilst there is inconvenience now, it's for the greater good in the medium to long term.
That's my point. I totally empathise with people trying to get to appointments and work. I do entirely. But if it isn't for these hauliers, and farmers, but I'm going to talk about my own personal, you know, what I see.
Mm-hmm.
Without these hauliers, there's no buildings getting built to make a hospital. There's no machinery getting into hospital. There's no medical equipment. There is no medicine getting to it. And if these hauliers cannot afford to move, which is their point, then how is that getting to anyone? You're not going to have an appointment because there won't be anything to cure you with.
All right, Chrissy. Listen, thank you for taking the call. Chrissy Watson there, who is a TikToker and talks of life as a haulage wife. Morning, says a listener. If fuel was cheaper here than Northern Ireland, then the border counties would benefit massively from fuel tourism. Lorries used to drive 50 miles from Northern Ireland to Mough to fill up every Sunday when it was cheaper there. Sometimes 1,000 litres at a fill. Luxembourg is the cheapest fuel in Western Europe, and trucks, including Irish trucks, all try to transit Luxembourg to fill up. Cement and building product suppliers are coming south every day, and they would all fill up while they were here if it were cheaper, leaving at least a little VAT and excise duty in the Republic of Ireland. From George. Yeah, George, you're right, of course. And listen, there's been over the years, maybe it's been a little bit more stable more recently, but for as long as I can remember, there were times where people rushed north and there have been times when people rushed south. And I suppose overall, the argument would be it's balanced out. But I do think the picture here is, and I'm sorry to sound like a scratch record, and it's not to oppose anything that's going ongoing, supply. Supply. And you make something cheaper, people buy it, people hoard it, and then you run out quicker. And I think that's what's in the government's mind. I don't know. And if it were, why not come out and say it? Maybe it's not. But that's what I feel that's going on. Now, hopefully, if this strait stays open now, that side of it would be less of a concern. And maybe the government could use some of that rainy day fund it's putting away, 1.5 billion, as I mentioned in the first quarter of the show. And maybe they could use that to give proper relief and get the country moving again until such time as prices come down. And we know it's going to be slow. If this is all resolved, it's going to take a long time for that oil. You know, there's normally like, what, 120 tankers a day go through the Strait of Muruz or Hormuz. That's been down to none and one or two, right? So obviously, if you turn the tap off, you're going to run out eventually. That's just the bottom line. Hopefully now with that tap being potentially opened, supply won't be the issue down the line and we can start working on price. But there has to be a will. There has to be a will. And this is an emergency situation and we're seeing emergency responses to situations. Something really can and should be done. And if there's a reason why it can't be, let's have that conversation out in public. This is our life. It's all ours, really, effectively. We as people, not most of us, many of us as people, elect people to make decisions on our behalf. But they are our decisions. There are people working on our behalf for our benefit. Now, sometimes they have to make tough decisions, I presume, that we don't like, right? But fundamentally, they work for us and they are there to control our money. All of that money that's being put away or all that money that's being spent is our money. And sometimes I think we have a detachment from that. It is our money. And the people who we elect are our elected representatives. And obviously, they can't please all the people all of the time. But at what point do they say, right, okay, this country's on its knees in terms of carers going to care, bus drivers going to bus, lorry drivers going to deliver their stuff, doctors and nurses getting to and from hospital, mums and dads getting to and from school next week. You know, it's our money. They're our government, whether you voted for them or not, they're there. That's democracy. We need to do something that's best for the nation, even if that means stepping outside the rules of the EU for a moment. A caller says the government has money to give Ukraine, money for a new jet, money for them to go to the USA, money to get driven everywhere or wherever they go at taxpayers' expense, money to give themselves pay rises, money for Pascal to give to the bank that employed him, but no money for their own people. What time a government does the likes of this? There's a choice that was made to put 1.5 billion away in the first 3 months of this year for 2040. I'm not going to keep repeating myself. That money is there. That was a decision that was made. That money could be repurposed to reduce fuel by 45-50 cents per litre for the period of 2026. So I take all of the points that you're making in terms of where money has been spent, but a choice was made, and that was a choice of government. A caller says, we have politicians that do nothing but tell fibs. They are there to serve us, not the other way about. They don't look after us. They are more interested in Europe, believes the listener. Another, why are all government ministers and TDs given such a large expense account and a large travel allowance on top of the very generous salaries that they all get? And why aren't they sticking their hands in their pockets and paying their way for themselves like everybody else? I do think if that were the case, I think sometimes... And I often go back to the case of a female. It doesn't matter whether she's a man or a woman, but just to identify her, a TD who had to go to a public hospital with her child who was sick, and was flabbergasted by it, that this is the way modern Ireland is, and yet we'd been enduring this all of the time, and that's a detachment. That's a detachment from the lived reality of people. And maybe if elected politicians, who have a tough job, don't get me wrong, but maybe if they had to live off the same resources of us and couldn't retire whenever they wanted to as a millionaire with three or four pensions, you know, maybe they would be able to make better decisions. Because if you're insulated from it and you're surrounded by yes men and women who think you're doing a great job, are you able to make proper good decisions for the people? And that's whether you're whatever party or no party, don't get me wrong, it's not a party political point. Now, I received numerous communications over the weekend about access to Tra na Rosan Beach. Now, this is a beach that is a jewel in the crown, so to speak. It's a five-star beach, you could describe it as. But apparently, there is a landowner who owns land around Tra na Rosan Beach in Downings and has erected four strands of barbed wire, and an entrance gate has been bolted to prevent anyone walking to the beach. Now, this has, as many people feel, always been a right of way. It's a path maintained by the local authority, as far as we can determine. We've been contacted by locals and visitors alike who often use this beach and are devastated that access has been restricted. And a lot of people were arriving, obviously, over Easter and were unable to gain access to that. One local representative in the area joins him now. Councillor Liam Blanian. Liam, I mean, we talk about many different things over the years, but this comes up time and time again, doesn't it, whereby, you know, presumed access to a facility by the public is removed. And what is the situation as far as you can outline for us?
Good morning, Greg. the situation is that the access to the beach is on private land. And the owner has been in talks with the council on and off for quite a length of time. And they're looking for the council to insure the land, because we all know nowadays it's not safe to have anybody crossing your property, because if anything does happen to them, you're liable for it. And that negotiations just hasn't been completed in time for the Easter break, and the landowner decided to protect himself and the people that would be using it, that he had no other option but to close off the access to the beach.
Are you sympathetic until there is an agreement with everything you've outlined there, and precedent too, in the relatively close to where we're talking about? Have you sympathy for the landowner in this regard?
I have sympathy for the landowner, I have sympathy for the people looking to use the beach. And unfortunately, that this has not come to a conclusion long before now. But we are where we are. And I think to try and help the situation, that I know there's a lot of, and I had a lot of communications with a lot of people this last week about it too, and I have been in discussion a lot with both the landowner and the council this last while on it. But I'm hoping that negotiations is coming to a conclusion very, very shortly, and that there will be an agreement in place. You know, we have a lovely beach down there where there's no portaloos, there's no bins, and people are using private land for to both throw litter on and for using for toilets, as well as the safety of the people, for this farmer who has cattle and sheep in his land. And I think for everybody concerned, that the quicker there is an agreement put in place, the better it's going to be for everybody.
How long do you think this, and this is a piece of string and I'm not holding you to it, Liam, but when we talk about negotiations and what might need to be put in place, you know, you mentioned a lot of things about public toilets and there's talk of boardwalks and all that type of stuff. In terms of, I suppose, basic access, returned access, so the landowner has some level of protection, not liable if someone twisted an ankle and decided they wanted to sue them. How soon do you think that could be resolved? And then maybe talking about improved access, maybe even some bins or other facilities. Short term, is there a solution?
I'm hopeful that it could be resolved this week, but I'm not putting a gun to landowners.
No, I understand that.
But I do believe that, you know, if everybody is reasonable about it, that we could come to a conclusion before the end of this week on it.
So in other words, the council are aware of it.
Hopeful on that.
The council are aware of it. They're active. They've got precedent here, presumably so, in terms of liability cover. It would be a case of extending it. And the landowner, as far as we can determine, is obviously prepared to work with the council to come up with some resolution, but also to protect their interests.
Definitely. So the landowner is willing to take this to a conclusion as well. And look, the council can, but it still has to be negotiated on. And then until negotiation is final and complete, you can't say it's going to happen.
No, but of course not.
The council can both close off the right of way with agreement with the landowner and leave crossings where they can move their animals over and back, if that's agreeable. It could be. I'm only throwing these things.
Understood.
That could happen. Leave it safer for everybody. The access can be improved down to the beach. The public portaloos can put there and bins can be sorted. And them are things, I think, that can be sorted. But the landowner has to be happy with the agreement that's going to be put in place where the council's going to ensure it. And if he's 100% agreement with it, I don't see why that should take much longer. And I don't believe that it will take much longer. But, you know, that's not, as I say, put a gun to anybody's head.
It's a process.
The quicker started, I think the better for everybody.
Yeah, it's a process, and I think it needs a bit of breathing space for it. But hopefully, with a good tailwind, it could get over the line really, really quickly. Right, Liam, thanks for the update. I appreciate it.
OK, thanks very
much.
Look
after yourself, Councillor Liam Blaney there. So the council are in talks with the landowner near Trana Rossan, as you heard from the councillor there. This is a beautiful beach in the Downings area, by the way, and people have enjoyed access to it. I am sympathetic to the landowner, because if they could potentially be liable for something, you know, you have to have some level of understanding there. And I think for a long time, we played things fast and loose not talking about this case, but just in terms of access and liability and rights of way. And, you know, if this is a period of negotiation to get something established in there that's locked in, that is fair to the person who owns the land, but also may even provide better facilities down the line, well, you know, we might lose out on the Easter break, but hopefully something is resolved there. And we've seen, as I say, precedent in that area, whereby with the right negotiations, access is restored and often improved as well too. So we'll watch on with interest, give that a little bit of space to see how things get on. Matt Carthy. Hi, Greg. Please ask Matt why Sinn Féin has not brought legislation similar to the right to ask and power to tell legislation that's available in Northern Ireland, despite the fact that it was passed at the Ardèche a number of years ago. I'm sorry, you're familiar with that. I wasn't, and I got that question after Matt had concluded his contribution. The Donegal County Council should just compulsory purchase that right of way in Downings. It's been there for years, same as Truss Loch and the Twin Towns. This should have never happened. It was a right of way walk around the loch. By law, they can't close it. If DDC don't get their act together, it'll be gone. These walks have been there for hundreds of years and they can't just take them away now. Thanks. But we are a pretty litigious society now. And if someone does own that land and they have a fence and someone puts their logo over it and cuts the vein on the inside of the leg, you know, there could be a big court case. That person could be liable. So if that is the case, well, then we do have to. Now, compulsory purchase orders are often an act of last resort. But anyway, maybe. Let's see how the negotiations go and we can cross those other bridges as we come to them.
Where your opinion matters. The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Good morning to Claire, Josephine, Mary, Dolores, Beth, Anthony, Charlie, amongst those watching the show. Just to let you know that if you don't already and it suits you to do so, you can watch this program every day on your smart TV or your Fire Stick. We're on the YouTube app, so you just type in Highland Radio Ireland. If you could give us a follow or subscribe, it'd be great. Really appreciate that. Many of you watch across our Facebook pages as well and on the X platform. It's always good to be able to reach people in many different ways. And also, too, for people perhaps maybe who struggle with their hearing but want to stay up to date with everything that's going on, there's a couple of options for you there. This show is podcast on Spotify every single day. It's available shortly after 11:30. And Spotify includes subtitles and it also includes chapters. So just perhaps maybe if you've someone in your life who is hard of hearing and they want to know what's happening, what's going on, the conversations, well, then you can point them in that direction. So you can even watch the show live and there are generated subtitles on YouTube and Facebook, or indeed watch the podcast. Well, it's not actually watching, but you can read the podcast as it's played back on Spotify. I'm not sure about Apple Podcasts because I don't have an Apple phone or Apple anything for that matter, but it's a really good feature on Spotify. And also, too, we have a podcast, a sister podcast to this show. It's the Greg Hughes Podcast, released every Friday. And we chat to real people with remarkable stories. We have a fantastic episode coming up for you again this Friday at 11. But it's populated amongst the show. So in other words, if you go to Spotify or Apple Podcasts, you can see every day's show, but also the Friday show will jump out at you because they are specific. And, you know, really some remarkable, remarkable stories. And it's great to be able to, I suppose, put these stories on record forever. You know, we were chatting to Timmy, who's stepped down from his role with Bunbeg Coast Guard after 30 years of service. And not because necessarily he wanted to, but he hit that age of 70 where you must. And it's just a really interesting conversation with a very ordinary but remarkable person. And there are many, many, many stories there. And as I say, we have another very interesting one for you coming up on Friday. Marty McElhenney joins me on the show now. And Marty, as you would know, a guest on the show, is a spokesperson for downgraded homeowners in the context of defective concrete blocks. Marty, thanks for joining us.
No problem, Greg. Thanks for asking me on.
Yeah, and it's off the back of some comments you've made in relation to, and people might say, what, until they actually hear the story, hold music with Donegal County Council. So tell us the situation.
Okay, so yesterday I saw a post on the 100% Redress for All Facebook page, and it was a post by the great Paddy Dever, and he was commenting on the wait times at Donegal County Council DCP office, and he made a comment about the song, that the song choice, that was kind of ridiculous, the song choice was The Homes of Donegal, you know, a really well-known song. I have a problem with that, and I'm not the only person who has a problem with this. You're talking about hold music when you have to ring the DCB line at Donegal County Council. And the song that they play on repeat continuously, and some people are waiting, they're 45 in the queue, they're 72 in the queue. So this is a long, long wait. And the song that is on repeat is The Homes of Donegal. Now, it's not about the song itself, it's about context here. The song's a great song. The Homes of Donegal is a well-known song, and it's about an emotional attachment to homes in Donegal. That's why it's a completely inappropriate song choice here. People ringing the DCB line at Donegal County Council, they're ringing, they're under serious stress. They're dealing with homes that are cracking and deteriorating, and listening to a song that idealises the homes of Donegal when you're in that situation just makes it worse. And what flabbergasts me is that, you know, I am one of the downgraded homeowners. And 2 years ago, I commented 2 years ago, but it was actually over 2 years ago. I had reason to ring the defective concrete line at Donegal County Council a lot. I was a transitional applicant from the old scheme to the new scheme, and the delays were awful. So I was constantly calling for updates and trying to get my engineer's fees repaid. And I flagged two or three times that I found this song choice really, really upsetting. And I knew at the time, from speaking to other people, that I was not alone, that many people had highlighted this. So to see Paddy's comment yesterday saying that this was still the song choice, when Donegal County Council would be absolutely, completely aware that people are very upset and frustrated that this is the song, I can't get over it.
And the thing also is that, say, for instance, you made a comment on X or were highlighting something on X, Marty, and someone down the country wanted to troll you or take the hand out of you, they could post the video of that song and a laughing face. I'm not saying for a moment anyone at Donegal County Council is doing it, but it does feel like, I'm sure, when you're on that line, as if you're trolling. It's like, are you for real? That I have to sit in this line for 6, 7, yeah. 10, 15, 20 minutes listening to the Homes of Donegal, yeah. and I'm trying to get an update on my house, which is crumbling around me. If the motivation was different, it would be classed as trolling.
Yeah, well, you know, it's so upsetting, but at best, it's tone deaf. At worst, it does feel like a slap in the face, especially when this has been repeatedly highlighted. I'm shocked. This was being highlighted 2 years ago. I thought this was bound, you know, I got caught up in the system then. I got caught up with the scheme. You know yourself the story behind that. And I've had no reason to ring recently. But to find out now, over 2 years later, that this is still the song. This is still what victims of defective concrete in Donegal have to listen to. And you're talking thousands and thousands of people. Mm-hmm. So if they have to ring Donegal County Council and they're sitting in their kitchen and they're waiting for 10, 20 minutes, looking at the cracks in their walls, and they're listening to this Homes of Donegal.
Yeah, again, I don't yeah. think
you know,
I don't
really
think
it's a really emotive song.
Yeah, and I don't think I need to keep putting it in scenarios, but I'm going to again. If you told someone down in Galway, you say, "Hey, come here, you'll never believe what song we have to listen to when we're yeah. trying to get," they wouldn't believe you. Do you know what I mean? Like, so, and the reason I'm trying to give these examples, Marty, is because people might be listening and go, "Seriously, as if what?" But that's why I'm trying to give it extra context to try and make people understand how it feels. Hurtful.
Yeah, the Homes of Donegal. I'm sitting looking at my house now. I'm outside. I'm hiding in the carriage, to be honest. I'm hiding on the kids and the children for a bit of peace. And I'm looking at the cracks all over my house, and I'm looking at the cracks all over my neighbour's house. So to me, the Homes of Donegal, you know, 14 years ago when we got married, we had that song played at our wedding reception because we had so many people come from abroad that we thought this is a brilliant song. And it is a brilliant song. But now when I think of that song, I feel very upset because to me, the Homes of Donegal are crumbling. They're rapidly deteriorating. It's not a nostalgic song in the sense that, oh, I want to go home to my lovely home in Donegal. To me, it's horror that all these homes are literally deteriorating rapidly around people. And people, you know, it's dismal figures that have actually been remediated. So we are literally thousands of homes deteriorating. And that song is the song that's played at the DCB, on the DCB line at Donegal County Council's offices. It shouldn't be played in Donegal County Council. There should be no reason for this song when it has been repeatedly highlighted and voiced over the years that this is the wrong song choice.
Okay.
I can't understand why it's still being played, Greg, is the big thing when it has been voiced.
Oh, this is the music.
Hello, my dear.
Yeah, so I want to be careful. That's an automated response. I want to be careful no one from the council answers and we can drop that call now. But just to give people an idea that this is the piano version of the Homes of Donegal, as people would know. I just wanted to demonstrate.
Everybody knows that song.
Okay, all right. What's the update in terms of homeowners downgrading? There was something seemed of a little bit of a breakthrough previously. Has there been any progress since?
Yeah. Well, I think we're now, I imagine there's a bit of a lull with Easter and stuff, and we're expecting a lot of decisions from the appeals panel in the next couple of weeks. But so far, we're into the 20s figure now of downgraded homeowners who've appealed, and every single appeal so far has been annulled due to serious and significant errors of law or fact. Multiple serious and significant errors of law or fact. And, Greg, that's interesting because I was just talking to somebody about that recently. Yeah. And the first time, you know, I took legal advice in October 24, asking, can I go on the air and say these are legally flawed decisions? And I was told, yeah. So in October 2024, I spoke on your show. Now, you were off that day. It was Donal. Donal was stepping in for you. But that's the first time, October 24, we voiced these were legally flawed decisions. And instead of stepping in and doing anything, they allowed more people to be plunged into this misery and limbo that we are residing in.
So what's the figure? What's the figure back then? Yeah, what's the total figure now, approximately, of downgraded homeowners, Marty?
Well, the approximate figure now, it's about 22 that or higher that have had their appeals annulled.
But how many do you think are in the process?
Funny, I think there should be about 70-odd decisions. And, Greg, there's something really disturbing me about that figure, because we knew initially that that figure was up around 140. We knew that, you know, 90% of all downgrade decisions had been appealed. Mm-hmm. And then the announcement of the technical review came in, and I had voiced before that I had serious concerns about the technical review as an attempt to bypass the appeals panel.
Yes.
And we are strong in our group. We have 95-odd in our group, and we stood firm. The majority of us, there's literally probably just a very small handful that opted for the technical review.
Mm-hmm.
We had closed-door meetings in July 24 where we did say these were legally flawed decisions. So we stood firm in our group, and it's people outside our group who seem to have opted for the technical review. And I feel quite badly for them, because I do feel it was an attempt by the state to bypass the appeals panel, because the appeals panel, we did say that these were legally flawed decisions back in 2024.
Mm-hmm.
And we have been vindicated, Greg, because the appeals are proving us correct.
Yeah, it's just interesting. You think at this stage, with the level of successful appeals, that someone would save people an awful lot of time and stress and actually review them all, and where there is the obvious commonality, just blanket overturn it. But anyway, listen, Marty, mm-hmm. thanks for your update.
Yeah.
I appreciate it. Thanks,
Greg,
for...
Greg, can I just make one
yes,
wee point? Greg, sorry. I just want to make one point. Every person I've ever dealt with on the phone in Donegal County Council has been brilliant.
Of
they do a great job
yeah.
with very little
yeah.
thanks, and they're not at fault here. So I just want to make that clear, because I know a couple of them, but they're not at fault. It's not their fault this music's being played, but this music does need to be changed.
Finally, Marty, how long are you going to continue your refuge in the car for? How long are you allowing yourself?
Well, I'm a wee bit, I'm kind of worried that they're probably listening to it in the house, so we'll know when I hang up.
You recline the seat there, right? You recline the seat there, and I'll just rerun the interview. How's that? You can have 10 minutes.
Yeah, that'd be great. That'd be great. Thank you so much, Greg,
all
and
right,
everyone. Thank you.
Thanks, bye-bye, Marty. Bye-bye. That's Marty McElhinney there, spokesperson for the downgraded homeowners. And as I say, and I was trying to give examples in case it feels like, come on, seriously. It's how people, if you told people this down the country, they would laugh and they would say, not a chance. Are you having a laugh? And another listener says, Greg, same thing happened to us. Put on hold while contacting DCC, the Homes of Donegal, playing as background music. Ridiculous. We heard it. I played it at live myself. I had to be careful because I would never want to inadvertently broadcast anyone from the council, nor did we. There's a recorded message that comes up as a cycle, but it's still playing. The Homes of Donegal piano version. Not sure who it is. Is it Phil Coulter or some generic playing of it? But anyway, maybe just for that line, something a little bit different. It's not malicious. It's not intended. And it sounds to me a little bit like just an oversight. I'm surprised no other suggestions for hold music if you're waiting on the defective concrete block line have come in yet. I'm not even sure if it's something maybe those of you who are stuck in that situation would even want to suggest. But anyway, the consensus seems to be it shouldn't be the Homes of Donegal with thousands of them crumbling. A listener quite rightly points out the music or air of the Homes of Donegal is believed to be traditional and over 150 years old. While Donegal school teacher Sean McBride wrote the lyrics in 1955, the melody is a traditional Irish air that's been used in several other songs. You're quite right, and it's always nice to learn a little bit of history. But I think in musical terms, it's been standardised as the themes for the Homes of Donegal. And if you were to argue that we used it in a pre-1955 context, I don't think anyone would buy that. So I really appreciate your information, and it's completely accurate. But at the end of the day, if you're in that situation, it's not very nice. Right. Hi, Greg. When we're chatting about money, remember the ship that was got with all the drugs in Cork in 23? Well, the Revenue Commissioners have spent 14.5 million of the taxpayers' money looking after it. And guess what they're selling it for? 10 million. And it could never be sold. Some country we live in, says that listener. Yeah, indeed. Thank you so much for your comment there. On the issue of beach access, there is a common law that every citizen should have access to the coast throughout the county. It's a law that has been in place since the beginning of time. I see farmers putting up barbed wire fencing on common ground with no style on land that belongs. Again, that could be right, but the one thing that we can't get past is that it's potentially the landowner who's liable in an incident and could literally have their livelihood and their property taken from them if if found against them. And if that is the case, they also have a right to protection, because the council does have a liability insurance policy. They pay quite handsomely for it, i.e. we do. So if that needs to be extended to protect a citizen, well then, so be it. Sean McGonigal is from Growpath Media. Hi, Sean.
Hi, how are you, Greg?
Good to have you on the programme. AI images are harming small businesses. That's the start point of the conversation. How?
Yeah, well, Greg, my main point really is that a lot of small businesses are using AI-generated content thinking it's helping them. But in many cases, it's actually damaging how the business comes across all online.
Yeah, and it's not just small businesses. I know that's what we're going to focus on. But, I mean, like, I'm starting to see, you know, biggish football GA clubs, county boards using it, and it looks cack, and people know it's AI generated and it's lazy, and footballers have 10 fingers on one hand. You know, I think it's not just the small businesses which we'll focus on. I think people really need to understand that you can tell at this point. It might be different in a month, Sean, but at this point you can tell. So what are you seeing that you think's disadvantageous for businesses?
Well, I think one main one is this sort of poster style content that's coming out, and I guarantee you've seen it about. It's the sort of thing where they've put in like real photos, but then, you know, it's over edited someone's face, or it's stuck in like massive bubble writing somewhere, and it just doesn't look great for any business.
Yeah, and whilst it might feel exciting and something you can do yourself, there's probably, you know, lots of industries whereby AI will eventually replace, including mine. You're saying that businesses maybe don't want to choose the path of least resistance. It could be damaging.
Yeah, it's that there are so many jobs out there that AI, and especially my line of work, that AI definitely could take. Like, there's you have your graphic designers and social media managers, and it's really, if you see something that a graphic designer made and something that AI made, like, you can really tell what's human and what's not. It's really important that we don't move away from that, honestly.
Yeah, and, you know, even if they can't outsource it, there are free and relatively easy tools to use out there where you can generate something to advertise an event or what have you, and it looks a bit more professional.
Yeah, it's like you have Canva. Canva's out there. Canva has a free version, but it also has a paid version. But the thing about Canva is that if you're using that, you can go on YouTube and look for Canva tutorials, and there's thousands upon thousands of things there. And it really means it just looks like you're putting a lot more effort into your content. And I can tell from what I've seen with engagement that when people use AI content, you can see their likes, shares, everything drops down, because you can tell from, even, you know, I've spoke to people in my own industry, I've spoke to those friends and family, and they'll tell you if they see something of AI come up, they generally do just skip on and ignore it.
It's funny, and sometimes that can happen subconsciously, can't it? It's not like someone goes, ooh, that's AI, I'm repulsed. It's just something that turns them off. And Sean, you know, I think businesses are really good and they do understand social media, but, you know, if you've got a particular business, you're far better off having, you know, 500 highly engaged followers compared to 75,000 disengaged. You know, that the follow count might look good when people land on your page, but it's the back end, the interactions that businesses need to look at. That's where you're engaging with your people. That's where you know that's the way you know how successful or not your social media campaigns are.
Yeah, that's starting to become a big trend when we're looking at people's followings and that. And a lot of the following and the engagement on the page is coming internalized instead of bringing in new viewers, which is quite a big thing that's happening at the moment, especially with Instagram, that a lot of, say, the likes on the video or the shares are all coming from already new already their followers, which would, you know, it needs to be coming more from outside of the page.
Yeah, I understand the like and share thing, you know, share this, tag someone in, put someone's name in. I don't really think, and I'm interested in your view, Sean, I think that's spam. I don't really think it's very effective. I think really it ends up being rotated in a relatively small circle. I think it lacks invention. There are far better ways to engage people and to spread the word with quality content. I think that can be quite lazy and people feel they're doing something when in fact they're not.
Yeah, I know so many examples of the like and share thing where someone will think they're getting on great because maybe they've like, share, follow, and they've gained 5,000 followers. But maybe in the next week, once the like and share is over and something's won, they'll lose maybe 3,500 of them. There's stuff like that. And it is now getting to spam with some businesses, where some businesses will have won every week. And then it'll be just the same prize or the same content the whole time.
Yeah.
But yeah, your point on just the organic real content of maybe like your product photos or the landscape your business is in, they'll always outdo stuff like that.
Yeah, and you can have a bit of fun with it too. Downing's Bay Hotel, for an example, I don't know if they do their own, and I'm not picking them out in particular, but their content is really engaging. You know, they get the point across. There can be a semi-viral element to what they're doing. Mm-hmm. That's just to give one example compared to maybe another, and which I can't give an example of, where it's just sort of, you know, tag this in to win a 5-euro voucher or something. All right, Sean, and I'm asking you this, it wasn't set up with a view to me asking this in any way, shape or form. Do you work with businesses, Growpath Media? Is that your job? You work with them on socials and stuff or what?
Yeah, I consult and I do side admin work with them too. But yeah, that's my job, or my side job. I do.
That's your side hustle.
Yeah, it's the side job. Yeah.
Okay, good man, Sean. Thanks for your insight. Look after yourself, Sean McGonigal there, Growpath Media. Because I think the message is also and it's well worth for a business to take into consideration people who use screen readers, because if you are visually impaired, you use a screen reader, you know, you could create this imagery that there are people in society that aren't actually getting it at all. So there's alt text, or you can paste in the text as well, along with the point that you're making. But just to be sure, you can have a bit of fun with it. There's no harm in that. But if you lean on AI generated, this is Sean's contention, if you lean on AI generated content or pictures as your marketing strategy, it actually could be doing you a disservice. Greg, people in Ireland always complaining about the Irish government, yet who do people vote for during election time? Who are people going to vote in during the next election? The very same government again. So why are people now complaining about the government when it's always the same government people vote for? Well, you know, this comes up a lot. Give people a break. Like, let's break it down in the most simple terms as possible. Firstly, what? How many people voted in the last election? 50%? So that's 1 in 2 adults. 20% voted for Fianna Fáil, 20% voted for Fine Gael, 20% voted for Sinn Féin-ish, and the rest was split up between the protest votes or whatever it might be, right? So, you know, we have proportional representation. So a person didn't necessarily pick this government, but that's the way democracy works, and that a government has to be formed. And the other side, the right parties, couldn't form a government, but the parties that were in power received enough of endorsement from those that voted to go back into the election. But it doesn't mean people went out and voted and you can, you know, give a whole load of abuse to people and blame them for voting this is the government that's in there. It's not their fault. It is democracy. It's the way our democracy works. And it's not the greatest, but it's probably one of the best, is it? The alternative, what is it, dictatorship, first past the post, what would that have delivered? Probably a similar result. Okay, so there was a huge movement of people yesterday in protest over fuel prices. There were further protests today, which are having quite a significant disruptive impact in terms of fuel depots, where the wholesale fuel is taken to be distributed amongst the various petrol stations, in inverted commas, and also Dublin's commuter traffic this morning was very heavily disrupted. There are protests planned again for tomorrow, with gathering points Donegal, Athlone, Cork, Portlaoise, Sligo, Port Tumna, Cork, Dublin, Waterford and Wexford. The People of Ireland Against Fuel Price Protest Group is behind it. They're organising it on social media. Councillor Thomas Sean Devine of 100% Redress Party is with us. And by all accounts, there was a huge turnout this morning. We don't know how many vehicles, I suppose, that turned up yesterday are still down the country, but people also have businesses to run as well as everything else, Thomas. Are you surprised at the turnout today? Were you expecting more? You were down there.
Yeah, good morning, Greg. Good morning, dear listeners. Yes, Greg, I went down this morning. Unfortunately, I couldn't make it yesterday morning with our commitment, so I decided that I would go this morning. I seen the advertisement up yesterday evening that there would be another one gathering this morning, so I decided I would go this morning and support it. And since that, I've seen one organised for tomorrow. So again, I'll go and support that tomorrow. But I was, Greg, taken back a bit that there was only a small amount of people turned up this morning. Now, in fairness, there's probably a lot of people that were stalled down the country in it. And as you quite rightfully says, there's probably people who has not commitments and work commitments now that probably couldn't make today either. But it's good to see that it's still going ahead in Dublin and places. And there is a protest in Sligo today as well. So I think maybe there was just a wee bit of wires crossed that there wasn't too well advertised, or not wasn't too well advertised for this morning.
But yeah, but I mean, obviously, you know, on launch day, people wanted to have a, you know, for it to create a big impression, and it did. But at the end of the day, you don't need that many vehicles to cause the type of disruption protesters want to either. You know, it doesn't take, how many lorries would it take to lock up Sligo? You know what I mean? So, I mean, if that's the motivation.
Yeah. No, Greg, listen, we shouldn't even need to have the protest, or anybody shouldn't need to have the protest. You know, this is ridiculous. I think the government could have done far more, Greg, regarding fuel costs. Like, you know, 500 litres of oil yesterday was costing over €900. You know, this was ridiculous. Like, when it costs 11 crisis, people's already struggling as it is. You know, I listened to your show last week, Greg, where a gentleman was on stating, well, 50 litres of diesel was €104. He got €1.70. That's what he got in the phone station. Government was getting 65. You know, there's a lot of reductions that the government could make here immediately to relieve these people that's running coach companies, lorries and stuff that would be spending large and large amounts of fuel every day. You know, and they're just not doing it, Greg. You know, and they haven't even answered the people's letter requesting a meeting and requesting answers up until yesterday. And as far as I know, this morning, they still haven't responded to it. Protesters, you know, and this is not good enough, Greg. You know, that people have to go to these extremes to try and get answers from a government who's there to represent us.
But I really find it hard to get excited about politics, Thomas, and I'll tell you why.
Yeah.
The politicians are on holidays. The door's shut down. We're in a crisis. We literally were this morning on the brink of one of the greatest global catastrophes in the world ever. We're seeing diesel now 220, 225. I haven't heard opposition parties calling for maybe they have, sorry, by the way, for the dole to go back to work. Go back to work. The truth is well, a lot of our representatives, A, they don't have to pay their own fuel, but B, they're probably on their Easter holidays, you know, and the country's being shut down when the dole isn't even sitting.
Well, Greg, unfortunately, the opposition parties have called
for the dole to reset again. Right.
They have, they have. There's parties that have called for the dole to reset again, and they're not being answered. You know, he basically says, like last night, that we had one of these world leaders threatening catastrophe over in the Middle East, you know, and our dolls should have been sitting, because this affects the whole world. It affects us all, what's going on. And they don't. They're off on holidays, Greg, you know, and as you say, quite briefly says, this is not good enough. This doll should be sitting. They should be answering these questions. They should have been sitting yesterday. This protest was organised a couple of days ago. They knew it was coming. They knew it was going to cause carnage around the country. And Hunter has been brought to a standstill. But people are fed up. And they should be answering them questions, Greg, and they're not. You know, they're not coming out of their way to try and help people at all. And we've seen that over through the years.
You see, by the time they
we only have to look at our own crisis, the effect of concrete block crisis that we have here, Greg. It's a constant fight to try and get the minimal things done through your own. And now we have the same with fuel, and they're just not listening.
Yeah. All right, okay. Well, we'll see.
People have the right to protest.
I mean, like, the bottom line is, if I were Boon PR advice, which I don't, this will have pittered out by the time the dole sits again, you know, and the opportunity may. But anyway, we'll see. I'm not being negative. I hope I don't come across as negative. Councillor Thomas Sean Devine, thank you very much indeed. He's going down tomorrow morning, disappointed with the turnout this morning. But as I say, you don't need the same type of, you don't need the same number of vehicles to have the same effect as yesterday. Good morning, Greg. Any update on the Glenveagh Castle guided tours for this year? Remember last year, no guided tours on some days due to staff shortages. Thanks, Charlie. Charlie, we've contacted. I mean, I know they were looking for quite a few additional staff there. in one update we had towards the end of last year, I believe it was, or maybe it was earlier this year. It's very hard to timeline all of this type of stuff. I don't know if they were successful in those applications, and I'm not sure if these guided tours actually rest on that. We've contacted the castle, we've contacted the park, sorry, and we shall bring you a response if and when we get it. In relation to the hold music for Donegal County Council, the homes of Donegal, for people waiting for information from the defective concrete block office, the song should be renamed The Crumbling Homes of Donegal. How the government and council have allowed this crisis to continue is beyond me. If it was The Crumbling Homes of Dublin, it would have been fixed years ago. Greg, people in Ireland always complaining about the Irish government, yet why do people vote for during election time? Who are people going to vote for during the next election? The very same government again. So why are people now complaining about the government when it's always the same government people vote for? Crime. Good morning, Greg. How about adding any immigrant convicted of a serious crime? They get deported while we're at it. Does that not make sense? And on it goes. Thanks very much indeed for all of your comments coming in. The Iran and the US have agreed a ceasefire of sorts. We were on the brink yesterday, as I said at the end of the show and throughout the show. We've taken a step back from the abyss. Iran has achieved quite a bit in this war. They've been they've beaten the US in terms of resilience, it would seem, and resolve. And now they are in line to collect billions by running effectively the Strait of Hormuz, which was open and free before Donald Trump and particularly his string puller, Benjamin Netanyahu, began what they did. Christy Galligan joins us now. Christy, you're of the view, and I think a lot of people share it, including dozens of Democrats, that the US president is out of control. Expletive-laden tweets, X's, Truth Socials, whatever you want to call them, threats to destroy an entire nation, threats of war crimes, crazy stuff.
Yeah, and you know this, I mean, I followed, unfortunately, when, like we've all followed this madman's vitriol for the last number of weeks, and ever since the 28th of February when he decided, along with the Netanyahu, to start a war with Iran. What he has created now is even worse than what was originally there. And Iran now has come up with a 10-point plan against America's 15-point plan. And Trump, in some ways, has seemingly in interviews agreed to some of the
He says it's a document he can work with, yeah.
They can work with, which is a total contradiction, because if we can work with some of the stuff that Iran is looking for, like reparations, controlling the Straits of Hormuz, which was in international waters, not controlled by anybody, and to give in to all of that in order to have a ceasefire with Iran shows he's been humiliated. And actually, he's lost, and I say he's lost the plot, but he's really lost this attack on Iran. The resilience, as you said, of the Iranian people showed that they weren't willing to give in at any, no matter what bombing that was going to happen in their area. They were not willing to give in, and now they have more control than they ever had before.
But Christy, how was this allowed to get so far, do you think? Because, you know, the way a lot of people would have thought American politics is that, you know, the president is a figurehead, and really it's the civil servants and his understudies that make the calls. But clearly politics isn't set up like that. And people around him enabled him to get the United States into a no-win situation. A no-win, especially once bridges were populated voluntarily by people in Iran and the power plants were surrounded. He had no out other than this off-ramp that he was given.
Capitulation. Yeah. I call it a
capitulation. Well, it was
a capitulation. Yeah, I call it a capitulation.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it was a capitulation, but it also shows... But you see, the difficulty here is that NATO and European allies who disagreed fundamentally with him weren't strong enough to be forcefully objective, I think, against maybe Spain, who didn't agree, or maybe Macron and France, who were totally against this Iranian war, decided that, you know, that, you know, to kowtow to Trump's every you know, idiosyncrasy and things that he wanted. And people, the sycophants within his own administration, like Hegseth and Vance and all of those, they are willing to agree to anything that Trump has said, especially on his Truth Social, which seems to be just a rant-laden social media.
But they believe in themselves potentially liable also themselves, let me put it to you like that, for war crimes.
Yeah, but this is the point. You know, we have Trump, who is concerned with the two war criminals, Netanyahu and Putin, and yet he sees himself as some sort of patriot for the world. And this is a man that came in on the basis that he wasn't going to be involved in any wars, said he has now stopped 8 wars, now he started one himself. And he is now consorting with war criminals and involved in war criminality himself. Mm-hmm. I mean, who can trust that administration, or Trump administration, anywhere in the world?
Can I throw a couple of things in as well? He also has been forced to lift the sanctions on Russia. So now this crisis is financing Russia's war machine. He's now being forced also to lift all sanctions against Iran. United States is completely isolated bar the countries of the Middle East. He even called out the likes of South Korea and others. He has put his country in a crazy, crazy position. Will he, will the 25th Amendment be invoked, and will he be removed as not being fit for office? Because it's very hard to see how he can rehabilitate himself.
Well, I think we'll have to wait for the midterm elections, really, to see if the Democrats can flip both the Senate and Congress. And if they do that, if they can flip it. Now, remember, Trump was twice impeached, but unfortunately we didn't get to the impeachment part where he could be removed from office. The reason being is because the GOP and the MAGA group behind him decided, no, they wanted to, or they believed in this ideology that Trump was spoofing. And the problem for a lot of people now in America is when they've seen their petrol going up, or the gas, as they call it, up to $4 a gallon, and that they've seen prices hiked, inflation going up, interest rates are starting to creep up again, they have now decided enough is enough. Apart from his very strong MAGA supporters, they said enough is enough. Well, come the midterm election,
I know the likes
I think
of,
we'll see a huge change in America.
But we're seeing the likes of Joe Rogan, Candace Owen, Alex Jones, and many others who people might go, oh, well, sure, they're right wing, this, that, and the other. These are people that got him elected in the first instance, and they've turned on him. And I just think even maybe MAGA's outgrown him. I just don't see how much longer. I just think there'll be an exit strategy at this point. Christy, thanks for your input. I really do appreciate it. 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number if you want to get involved in that conversation. And I want to remind you once again that if you miss any part of this show, it's podcast for you. It's live pretty much from 11:30. It's available on our website, highlandradio.com. It is also available on Spotify. And please subscribe to it. Leave a comment. You know, it's no harm in that. It won't kill you, will it? And also, we're on Apple Podcasts. And every Friday we release our sister podcast, and it's a very interesting one, a very important one coming up for you again on Friday from 11 a.m. Any comments I didn't get to today will be carried through until tomorrow, as you can imagine. Lots of you get involved in lots of things. Thomas said, the politicians are on holidays, the door is closed, but the government still meets 2 to 3 times a week. The country continues to be run. He's not factual in what he's saying. Listen, I think respectfully, maybe it feels a little bit like semantics. The bottom line is the door isn't sitting. So in other words, the government aren't in their seats, the opposition aren't in their seats, and debating a national crisis, whether they meet or not, I don't know. Is that the point? Right. Anyway, thank you for your text, by the way. I'm not in any way dismissing it. That's where we leave it on the show today. Thank you to all of you who watched the show, who listened to the show, who texted in, called in. It's lovely having you as part of the wider family.